in the classic food desert. There's a lot of concentration of people who are having a hard time, families that are in disarray, a lot of struggles.
Well, Elaine and Barbara, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, our pleasure. What inspired Gaining Ground?
Everybody asks us that.
It's kind of a basic question.
I know, it's kind of a basic question. Barbara, it was sort of Barbara's trip in terms of she's so environmentally caring about, you know, and her shows. And anyway, so that's what she wanted to do. And I've been a filmmaker for way too long. And she says, well, let's do something about farmers. And I said, I'm from the Bronx. I was like, farmer, you know, who cares? And who'd want to be a farmer? You know, I was like, that's where it started off.
For and what inspiration. Did you picture when she said farmer? Were you picturing a straw hat?
I have no idea. Oh. I've become much more familiar with agriculture and these wonderful farmers.
Actually, when we met Vicki Hurdle, who's one of the farmers in the film from Sun Gold Farm, didn't you think she looked like a classic farmer?
I thought she was a classic lesbian.
Which she's not.
So you had nothing more specific in mind to start with than farmers?
No, actually, we were
wandering around the earth.
Well, we were originally going to do a film about urban gardening and urban farming. And as we did some research and tried to look into some possible places, people to talk with, we got the feeling that that wasn't really a very full story about what it would take to change our food system. And because we're interested in local food and the whole local food movement. So urban farming is all well and good, but it's not going to feed the world. And it turns out that we met an incredible urban farm in Richmond, California, Urban Tilt, who's the kind of feature in the film. But we intercut that with these two farms that are big farms. Well, one farm was at the time 5,500-acre grass seed, commercial wheat, and organic grain farm in Tangent, Oregon. That's Delford Seed Farms. And the other one was 160-acre or chemical-free produce farm in Verbort, Oregon, which is where Vicki Hurdle works and owns.
And the family farm.
And so we found a way of interweaving the interests and the perspectives and the reasons for rural farming. And basically, we had a large farm that was growing grains, a small family farm growing produce, and then like a micro farm that was the urban farm that was growing produce and whatever they could for the community.
Well, the editing took years. I mean, it took us 5 years to work on this
piece.
5 years? 5 years. And we just annoyed these people, wouldn't go away. So we followed the story. We followed like what was happening in Richmond and what was happening at Stalford, and you know, just it took a change in the middle where we thought we were doing the last shoot in Richmond, California. The refinery, God bless Chevron, went off. You know, which had
caught fire.
Caught fire every 5 years. It's a community of color and people who, you know, the Chevron had the worst record.
Very bad safety record.
It sounds like it's repetitive. It's happened before then?
Actually.
In terms of the fires?
Really, they have fires every 4 or 5 years. They do for another one.
They don't care.
And I mean, I was amazed. We were there. We came to town 2 nights before the fire happened. We were just kind of relaxing the night before we're going to do our first interview and found out the refinery was on fire. And the whole week changed. So instead of doing these interviews, wrapping up this wonderful program they do with teenagers, training them to be gardeners and farmers, they have an apprenticeship program for 5 intensive weeks. So instead of it being the wrap-up for this program, which we're going to film and celebrate and show what a great job they're doing, instead it became all this triage about dealing with this really horrible fire that spewed chemicals all over their gardens.
And what these people deal with day after day, and what they are amazingly resilient and fighting back, you know.
So did Chevron compensate these families for?
Oh, they give them some money. They give them a little, like they immediately came out with like a number
hotline number.
Like okay. They're so used to these fires, you know. You give them like $50 or $100.
Well, a little more than that. But
a little more than that. I don't know, but it's
they have a hotline for these situations.
Yeah, like as soon as well, it's like
I just want to make it really clear in this interview. You know, that Chevron has a hotline number
for
refinery fires. fires and, they have a and fire. Getting your food poisoned.
Right. Yeah, they'll say, like, hey, we poison you, but here, have, you know.
I just wanted to ask what the effect was on the farm and the crops. Yes. Is the chemicals seep into the soil? And
Well, they were very lucky. We kept going back down there to kind of check in what was happening. And we were there 6 months after the fire, and they were just in holding pattern because they needed to get their soil tested. And they'd been getting their soil tested by a college lab that had basically donated the services, and then once they needed to have a whole lot of other tests than the normal tests, this lab kind of said, well, you're not really supposed to be doing this, and so we're not going to do it for you. And it took them a while to find a place that would do it that they could afford. They had to raise money to do it. They got the test back, and they had no heavy metals in the soil, which was the big concern, because there are heavy metals that get emitted from mm-hmm. refinery fires. But they did have PAHs that are...
You know, PAHs.
It's a residue from partially burned petrochemicals.
Yeah, now we know.
But it recycles eventually. I mean, they were taking care of the way they were taking care of the soil, you know, the more they worked in the garden, the more it was protected, because it does recycle. These PAHs do recycle back.
They break down.
Into the carbon cycle. So, yeah, I mean, that's a little detail, but it was like we just had to follow and make sure that, I mean, they had such a hard time, and what they're doing is so amazing. And they're still going.
They're back up and running.
It took them about
14 months, and they got back up and running.
Only 14 months. It's incredible. Yeah. How has the refinery fire impacted farmers at large? I mean, there's the food poisoning aspect, yes, but I understand there's lots of different opinions about whether to go organic, whether to do an alternative to not using pesticides. And I'm just wondering how the communities were feeling going forward, rebuilding after the refinery fire, and whether that changed their minds about it.
Well, the refinery fire only affected the farm in Richmond.
Just in Richmond, okay.
In Oregon, we had our own trouble, because 6 months after the refinery fire, they discovered GMO wheat that wasn't supposed to be there in a field in eastern Oregon.
And this is one of the stories in the film, right? There's three different stories.
Right.
Okay.
There are three different stories.
Okay.
Anyway.
So that affected the wheat farmers. And I mean, it was wheat, and they're growing. It actually affected their commercial wheat. Their organic wheat was fine, but it really brought down the price of wheat, and it really just kind of upset their financial ecology.
Well, there's certain countries that won't buy GMO.
They won't. Yes. They don't want.
They shut
GMO.
Down the market. Yeah. I mean, to Oregon wheat. So Japan and South Korea
and Germany.
That's
just Asia.
It's Asia, and they stopped buying Oregon wheat for 6 weeks, and they. Finally up in the markets as the harvest, the farmers were harvesting their wheat, and it was all on the ground ready to go, and the price dropped because they could do that, and they sort of looked almost like a little conspiratorial, like, you know, what's going on here? But it really messed up those farmers very badly. Wow. And then the next year there was a horrible drought, you know, so this is part of in the film that we don't go into it in great detail is all the challenges of farming that are beyond your control.
Yes, these are organic, chemical-free farms, and yet you've got Chevron, and I guess with the GMOs, it's Monsanto
who's
responsible.
Right.
Yes, yes.
What's the third story about in this film?
Oh, the family farm, Sungold Farm. Oh, God, I'm blanking.
Okay, Sungold Farm is in Verbord, Oregon. It's a family farm. It's actually third generation on this land of the farming families. And they were a dairy farm for years. They came from originally from Holland and then Wisconsin, and they dairy farmers for five generations. So they were commodity dairy farmers. They were like making less and less money every year. And
the price of milk stayed the same while the price of feed, you know, went up.
And then they actually got busted by DEQ for having their cow operation, the buildings and the cows, too close to a creek. So they were about to be driven out of business, but they decided to try to grow organic, or actually it's not technically organic, but pesticide-free produce and sell it at farmers markets and ultimately through a community-supported agriculture program. And they are very successful now. They're doing great.
It's this wonderful family. And these farmers love farming. They just love it. And it is beautiful out there. I mean, I can understand a lot more than... I'm from the Bronx. What do you know?
where can our audience see this film? Is it too late to catch it?
It's showing this Thursday night.
That's
we're very
what I
excited.
Thought.
Yeah, this right at the Film Center, Witzel Auditorium. It's in the Portland Art Museum. It starts at 7 o'clock, And there's going to be a reception starting at 6 in the Stevens Room, which is right next to the Witzel Auditorium. So you come into the main entrance of the Art Museum and you go down a flight of stairs and you're there.
Okay. It's what? It's Northwest Tracking Program?
It's a Northwest Tracking Series. For the Hood River listeners, it's going to be shown at the Hood River Library on April 27th, also a Thursday night at 6 o'clock.
Will this also be available on DVD?
It's on DVD. Yes. People can get it at our website. I mean, the website is gaininggroundmovie.org, and you can order the DVDs there.
Excellent.
But we're just like, it's a very heartfelt. There's a lot of emotion and depth because we took all the time to get to know these people, and they let us into their lives, which we're very grateful
for. That's incredible. Very incredible. Well, Elaine, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. Again, just to be clear, people can catch it, Gaining Ground, the film, this Thursday at the Portland Art Museum in the Witzel, 7 p.m. You can also go to the gainingground movie.org. Is that
right.
correct?
It's just gainingground movie.org.
.org to get the DVD.
And there's a reception at the museum.
Not to be missed. Not to be missed, the reception.
I always... I'm there.
And then after the film, we'll be doing a question and answer.
Q&A. All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Zur, Zealous Marchant, Aaron Yankee, Ken Jones, Kanan Schlesinger, and Doug McVeigh. The producer is Zealous Marchant. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio. Our engineer is Matthew Vartella. The KBOO Evening News Director is Ellis Marchant, and the Evening Public Affairs Director is Kanan Schlesinger. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Zealous Marchant. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, the Abe and Joe Talk radio show covers politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of listener comments. At 9, on Alternative Radio, Laverne Cox, actor, documentary film producer, LGBTQ advocate, and star of the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, speaks on transgender visibility. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio, James Dixon presents the forgotten story of 11 Black American soldiers executed by Nazi troops during World War II's Battle of the Bulge with the author of The Lost 11. And at 11:30, Art Focus presents the work of Portland artist Sam Hamilton and his new exhibition entitled Standard Candles. Thanks, KBOO members, for all of your generous support. If you're not a member, you can definitely become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Gospel of Loving Kindness at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. The Gospel of Loving Kindness is a play by Marcus Gardley based on the true story of 15-year-old Hadiyah Pendleton, who was killed in Chicago after performing at the presidential inauguration in 2013. This play runs from March 10th through April 9th on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. Again, that's The Gospel of Loving Kindness, March 10th through April 9th on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 North Interstate in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is now 5:59. Coming up next, it is Labor Radio, followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30.